When seeking to appreciate a religious tradition not our own, it is helpful for us to begin with questions such as these. How do members of this other tradition pray? In what spirit do they stand in worship before God? What is their sense of the sacred? In what ways do they participate in the numinous and the transcendent? Such is the best approach, not to contrast formal systems of doctrine taken in isolation, but to consider how doctrine is lived out in personal devotion and mystical experience. Once we adopt this experiential or existential approach, we shall quickly discover a remarkable fact. Opposition and dialogue can frequently coexist. Religious groups that diverge sharply in their doctrinal formulae often agree at many points in their spirituality. Confrontation on one level is combined on another level with openness and the willingness to borrow from each other. Outward hostility is mitigated by inner convergence. In the history of the Orthodox Church, a notable example of this coexistence between opposition and dialogue is provided by St. Nicodemus of the Holy Mountain, 1749 to 1809. The era in which Nicodemus lived and worked, the second half of the 18th century, was an unhappy period of estrangement and conflict between the Orthodox and the Roman Catholic churches. In 1755, the Ecumenical Patriarchate had issued a decree declaring Roman Catholic baptism to be null and void and requiring all Roman Catholic converts to be rebaptized. In his classic collection of the church canons entitled Pedalion, Rudda, published in 1800, Nicodemus adheres strictly to this ruling. If economy has been exercised in the past, he states, this should now no longer be permitted. But at the same time, despite the fact that he considered Roman Catholics to be unbaptized and deprived of sacramental grace, he was yet willing to edit Greek editions of Catholic works of devotion and to circulate them among the Orthodox faithful. This he could not have done had he believed these writings to be erroneous and harmful. In this way, Nicodemus provides a striking example of what the Western theologian of the 15th century, Nicholas of Cusa, terms the coincidence of opposites. On questions of dogmatic theology, Nicodemus regarded the Catholics as heretics. From the canonical viewpoint, he considered them to be unbaptized. But in the realm of prayer and pastoral practice, he was ready to borrow from them and to make use of their writings. He shows how conflict on the level of official doctrine and ecclesiastical politics does not necessarily exclude constructive openness and the discovery of common ground on the level of spirituality. Opposition and dialogue can indeed coexist. This first example of convergence and exchange in the sphere of spirituality, taken from Nicodemus of the Holy Mountain, has been confined to the Christian tradition. The Greek hesychasts of the late 13th and 14th century, however, provide us with a second example that is not only inter-Christian, but inter-faith. In the physical techniques that they used while reciting the Jesus Prayer, the hesychasts display unexpected and remarkable similarities with Indian yoga and with the Arab and Persian Sufis. Indeed, at any rate, so far as the Sufis are concerned, these similarities are so close that direct influence of some kind seems extremely probable. The Jesus Prayer, as practiced by the Hesychasts, consisted in a short invocation, frequently repeated, usually in the form, "Lord Jesus Christ, Son of God, have mercy on me." The words "the sinner" may be added at the end, and there are other variants. The use of this prayer, so they believed, led to a vision of the divine and uncreated light of the Transfiguration. This repeated invocation came, in course of time, to be associated with a specific bodily method. Cryptic references to this method can be found in authors associated with Mount Sinai, writing during the 7th and 9th centuries, St. John Climacus, St. Hesychius of Vatos, and also in the Coptic Macarian cycle, dating from the same period. But more detailed descriptions are only found in the later Byzantine era, texts that are all included in the Philokalia, edited by St. Nicodemus of the Holy Mountain. Now, this physical technique comprises three main elements. First, bodily posture. A crouching or fetal position is recommended, with the hesychast's chin resting on his chest while he's seated on a low stool 9 inches high. The hesychast fixes his gaze on the place of the heart or the navel. This led the hesychast to be ridiculed as omphilopsychoi, navel psychics, people who locate the soul in the navel. A second element is control of the breathing. The speed of our inhalation and exhalation is to be slowed down, and at the same time, the rhythm of the breathing is to be correlated with the words of the Jesus Prayer. In the 19th century Russian text, The Way of a Pilgrim, it's suggested that the Jesus Prayer may also be coordinated with the beating of the heart, but this is not mentioned in Byzantine texts, though it is recommended by the Sufis. Thirdly, there is inner exploration. This involves concentration upon various psychosomatic centers. The hesychast, as he breathes in during the recitation of the Jesus Prayer, is to make his intellect noose descend with his breath into the place of the heart. In this way, intellect and heart are united, and the hesychast attains total integration. The heart, in this context, signifies not just the emotions and affections, but the spiritual center of the human person in its entirety, body, soul, and spirit together. The heart is situated not just in physical, but in spiritual space. This physical technique of the hesychasts involves a principle of the utmost importance. The body constitutes an essential element in our human personhood, and therefore it can and should play an active part in the working out of our meditation and contemplative prayer. But the physical technique did not, for the hesychast, constitute the essence of prayer. It's possible to practice the Jesus Prayer in its integrity without using any physical technique at all. Between the orthodox tradition of hesychasm on the one hand and yoga and Sufism on the other, there are obvious parallels. In the Hindu world, the yogis habitually employ a short formula of invocation or a mantra, often using a chaplet, a prayer rope. Their aim is samadhi, stillness, or hesychia. They may experience a vision of light. The need for a guide or guru is emphasized, as also in hesychasm. More specifically, we find in yoga, as in hesychasm, the same three elements as regards bodily technique. The recommendation of specific bodily postures, control of breathing, concentration of the attention upon particular psychosomatic centers or chakras. But of course, we have to remember that yoga is not explicitly theistic, whereas the Jesus prayer is specifically a conversation with a divine person, the second member of the Trinity. Now, direct borrowing between hesychasm and yoga seems unlikely, but when we turn to Sufism, such direct borrowing is surely possible. When a Sufi practices dhikr, the memory and invocation of the name of God, Allah, he is addressing a specific divine person, even though, in this case, the person is not Jesus, but simply God. Hesychasts and Sufis agree closely in their understanding of the heart. In both traditions, guidance from an experienced master is considered highly desirable. And in the physical method used by both hesychasts and Sufis, the same three features are found: particular bodily postures, control of the breathing, inner exploration. But the Sufi techniques are far more elaborate than those indicated in the hesychast texts. So, some influence is certainly likely, but research has not so far revealed how this mutual influence may have come about. We do not know at what date and in what places hesychasts and Sufis came first into contact, nor which side was influencing the other. But from the 7th century onwards, there certainly existed many opportunities for mutual exchange. So our examination of hesychasm, yoga, and Sufism brings us to a conclusion similar to that which we reached concerning St. Nicodemus of the Holy Mountain and Roman Catholicism. In both instances, dialogue does indeed coexist with opposition. In their formal expression of doctrine, hesychasm, yoga, and Sufism are widely at variance, but in their spiritual practice, in their ways of prayer and contemplation, above all, in the use that they make of the human body, there is a genuine convergence. Thank you.